Yay to Yay Volume 1, In the Beginning Why Are We Here? Part 2. Heya, Existence.
Now don't get me wrong. This will not be a religion versus science debate. I despise the first, because clerics are usually misguided. And I enjoy the latter, because the evidence scientists discover almost always points to God, confirming his witness. Such is the case regarding our existence. Yahweh's testimony has not changed in 3,000 years. He was right all along, which is not surprising since he was an eyewitness. It is the late 20th century scientists who have come full circle. Based upon the evidence, they now agree with God, although it remains too painful for most of them to admit it. Moreover, their predecessors, the fathers of modern science Copernicus, Kepler, Galileo, Newton, even Darwin and Einstein, were acquainted with the God of Scripture. In this light, let's review some scientific highlights that are pertinent to our discussion. We begin by recognizing that without the existence and active engagement of God, or an inconceivably enormous energy system completely unknown to us, the universe could not be expanding at an accelerating pace. Its expansion would slow due to the effect of gravity if there were not an active and enormous source of energy currently at work. Next, we must consider DNA, the double helix computer code of life. This blueprint is a language, and languages require a creator, a beneficiary, and a purpose. No designer, no language, especially one with billions of character combinations providing instructions to 100 trillion human cells. Further, the odds of elements accidentally engaging in a manner capable of forming life, and doing so with nutrients available, a means to acquire and process a food source, and a means to reproduce itself, all within the 5 million year time frame this actually occurred, is astronomical beyond reason, beyond belief. Statistically, it is less than 1 chance in 10 to the billionth power. This probability is so ludicrously extreme the number exceeds the quantity of fundamental molecular particles in the entire universe by a million billion fold. Furthermore, since life existed on Earth immediately after liquid water was available, there was no time for random chance in either inception or mutation. Mathematically, biologically, and physically speaking, macroevolution from inorganic matter to complex life forms through random chance and natural selection rather than intelligent design is so improbable that belief in such a theory ironically requires a blind leap of faith, one that requires ignorance of the evidence and a complete suspension of reason. Moreover, the universe is clearly built around man in scale, substance, and tuning. It retreats inwardly just as significantly as it expands outwardly. Life requires the specific elements, parameters, and behaviors we find. According to current scientific models, if any one of 1,000 physical aspects differed by as little as 1 part in 10x 120 power, life could not exist in any form. Therefore, our reality is consistent with God having created the universe for man and inconsistent with random chance. There are three places where some see Scripture to be in conflict with the still touted, yet completely irrational and unverifiable, universal theory of non-causal Big Bang and random chance macroevolution. They are as follows. First, the Scriptures speak of microevolution, of a phylum of things replicating after their kind, and not of systemic macroevolution, that is of chemicals to amoebas to humans. In support of God's position, there is but one transitional body form in the fossil record, not so coincidentally the very one that the Scriptures anticipated as finding, which is a blend between fish and reptiles, and there would have to be millions of them for macroevolution to be accurate. Further, the second law of thermodynamics, the notion of entropy, that disorder and randomness evolve in closed systems, or that systems mutate from ordered complexity to confused disarray, without outside influence, has always served as macroevolution's death certificate. This law states that information is lost, not gained and transmitted messages, and that there is a universal tendency for all matter and energy to evolve toward an inert and deteriorated state. Animals evolve downward, losing genetic information with time, consistent with the laws of thermodynamics. The second difference between creation and science is the early timing of water on the first day and its emphasis on the second day of Bereshith. But even here, God's testimony is accurate. He isn't talking about liquid water on Earth, but instead interstellar molecular clouds. When we apply the lessons of relativity to creation, the first day covers 8 billion years from our perspective and the second day, 4 billion years. Calibrated to the perspective of the witness, the focus on water during these stages is essential. Water is the second most abundant molecule in the universe, ranking only behind molecular hydrogen. Interstellar clouds are especially loaded with it, and they serve as the maternity wards of the universe where new stars, planets, and comets are born. Moreover, water is the central ingredient in all organic systems, which is why scientists look for it first when searching for extraterrestrial life. Therefore, in Bereshith/Genesis, water takes its rightful and scientifically accurate position related to the beginnings of stars on the first day, of our solar system on the second day, and for the emergence of plant life on the third day. But there is more to it. Water plays a crucial role during this period of our spiritual development as well as in man's history. So its inclusion makes perfect sense when the creation account is seen depicting the why of creation and the when of our salvation, replete with Yahweh's plan of redemption. Water is Scripture's primary metaphor for the purification of man's soul. Moreover, in the second millennium of human history, the waters of the flood were used to purge the earth of corruption. We will detail how these events relate to the Bereshith account as the days unfold. The third perceived conflict between science and Scripture is the most glaring. If the fourth day were about the creation of the sun and the moon, it is out of place. Vegetation, which is said to have blossomed on the third day, could not have existed without the sun. But if, as God shall demonstrate, the fourth day is the fourth millennium in the story of man's redemption after the fall, then its signs, signals, and remembrances are precisely where they must be tied directly to the arrival of the Messiah. Additionally, God does not say that He created the sun, moon and stars during the fourth day, but only that they would be signs, and thus would be visible at this time. Scientifically speaking, the Bereshith testimony is an accurate chronological depiction of what actually occurred. The sun had existed for billions of years before the atmospheric debris from the onslaught of volcanic activity and the aftermath of countless asteroid impacts settled sufficiently for the sun to be seen. The dust settled and plants gradually filtered out the carbon dioxide that had been spewed into the air, creating and transforming the atmosphere into the oxygen-rich and nearly transparent condition which exists today. The sun and moon could finally be seen in the fourth era of universal creation. Also pertinent, we find in the fossil record that there is a billion-year gap between the Earth bringing forth simple plant life, and the emergence of complex sea animals which exploded onto the scene, using the parlance of Bereshith. This gap is acknowledged in God's accounting. Further, having the creation of plant and animal life separated by a cosmological epoch enables Yahweh to devote the fourth day to a different form of life, eternal and spiritual life. The biggest barrier for most people, however, between science and Scripture, is that it's obvious that all of this could not have occurred in 6 Earth days. Unfortunately, most everyone deals with the conundrum by either accepting the impossible as fact or by discrediting the Genesis account, and therefore all Scripture with it. Not only are both choices errant, they both led away from God. On the subject of a cosmological day, over the course of the first 3 chapters, we'll reveal how the universe can be both 6 days and 15 billion years old depending upon the perspective of the witness. But for now, appreciate the fact that the best current estimation of cosmological age is between 10 and 20 billion years, with 14 to 16 billion years, plus or minus 10%, being the most likely range. There are two primary astronomical methods of measure for universal age, pulsars and redshift, but they both employ a substantial array of unproven and even untestable assumptions. For example, we know that the universe has not been constant, and consistency is required for either method to render a reasonable result. In addition, both astronomical calculations are forced to speculate regarding the nature and effect of 96% of the actual energy and/or matter in the universe, rendering their conclusions based upon the observable 4%. This known and assumptions aside, man's most enlightened guess, inclusive of studies of carbon dating, star evolution, and nuclear fuel consumption, is that the universe was created in a Big Bang, some 14 to 16 billion years ago, when energy was first transformed into matter. The initial galactic formation stage lasted about 8 billion years. Our planet, orbiting around a second generation star, was formed just over 4 billion years ago. The first signs of plant life on Earth manifest themselves shortly thereafter as liquid water made its way onto the scene. These plants produced oxygen, helping to clear the atmosphere 2 billion years ago. This provided the catalyst needed for the emergence of more complex and energy-dependent animals 1 billion years later. As you may have noticed, these events not only parallel the Bearsythe testimony, they occurred in the same order God specified. Equally important, the duration of each cosmological epoch diminished at the rate of what's known as nature's spiral. Each successive aspect of the spiral is approximately half the size of the one which preceded it. While it would be too premature at this point to get into a discussion on the longevity of man's time on Earth, the evidence indicates that Homo sapiens have existed 100,000 years or more. In the Den Joy chapter, we will discuss why this too is completely harmonious with God's testimony. Since I've broached the subject of testability, there are two popular and contemporary myths I'd like to bust. First, despite secular humanist claims to the contrary, many of the scientific theories taught in schools as science, which by their definition comprises those things which can be empirically tested, cannot in fact be validated. Even worse, many, if not most of man's cosmological, molecular, and biological evolutionary theories are in conflict with the empirical evidence and reason. While we know many things, most of the fundamentals currently escape our grasp. For example, we don't even know how many dimensions actually exist. Some scientists claim two within a holographic construct, the mundane say three, relativists claim four inclusive of time, but the more adventurous string theorists promote 7 to 10. We don't know how many forces are operating within these unknown dimensions. Electricity and magnetism are both forces, but they not only change from one form to another in moving fields, they coexist in light, which is not a force. Gluons are thought to generate the strong nuclear force, holding quarks together, but explanations of how that occurs requires untestable string theory in which the math itself is too complex to formulate or calculate. According to the theory, as many as 10×60 colors, or variations, of these invisible rascals are needed to rationalize our reality. Gravity remains a complete mystery to man, with quantum theory and relativity mired in an irresolvable conflict as to what generates its attraction. The first calls it a force but can't qualify the mechanism, and the second says it's an effect. Staying in the macro realm, 90% of the universe's energy cannot be accounted for within the matrix of space-time or within the assumed construct of 3 to 5 fundamental forces. And that means that the Big Bang Theory, apart from an intelligent designer and instigator, is errant by 96%. Only arrogant fools would postulate a theory as being true, when it is in fact 96% wrong. Turning to molecular constructs, There is no assurance that quarks and gluons represent the minutest atomic particles, but only that something smaller in scale eludes our ability to detect it or them. More befuddling still, there is no assurance these or any particles actually exist. The material world could be, and probably is, nothing more than organized manifestations of energy with everything in motion. On the biological front, every attempt to mathematically demonstrate that life, given enough time, could have emerged by random chance from inorganic matter has failed. The fact is, the fossil record confirms that the 2 billion years needed for the improbable to become probable has evaporated by at least 99%, thereby rendering man's conclusions errant once again. Further, in the transition from plant to animal life, macroevolutionary theory predicts the opposite of what we have observed. Rather than a single and simple animal body type gradually coming to exist from which all others were eventually evolved, every animal phyla known today burst onto the scene at the same time. Without a creator, there is no way to explain the development of life's extraordinarily complex blueprint, the binary language of cell communication, DNA, and the simultaneous existence of male and female forms occurring in one species, much less every species, by random chance and evolutionary mutation is absurd. Moreover, even if these things could be miraculously resolved, science still has no concept as to what consciousness is or how it came to exist. Nothing is more fundamental to life. Therefore, the core building blocks of cosmological, molecular, and biological science remain mysterious and untestable. Scientific assumptions not only haven't been proven, they can't be tested, and those which can be demonstrated have been found to be wrong. And that would explain why secular humanists don't want intelligent design taught in schools. They know that their theories won't stand up to scrutiny. But it begs the question, why are the promoters of America's national religion so arrogant as to say that they are right and that God is wrong when the opposite is actually true? That leads us to the second myth. All of these things, and especially the existence of the male and female form, are explained in Genesis, with God providing his rationale for everything he did. Moreover, the notion that is advanced in popular culture, that scripture cannot be tested and therefore cannot be taught as science, isn't accurate. Yahweh's word can be validated. God even told us how to do so, evaluate his prophetic predictions. Yahweh inspired men to document his forecast of future history centuries and millennia before the events they foretold occurred. He provided us with tangible evidence of their existence, proof, a paper trail of his prophetic proclamations. We can therefore test his witness against the ledger of history and archaeology. By checking to see if each prediction was fulfilled exactly when, where, and how the scriptures predicted it would occur, as evidenced by archaeology and recorded history, we create a testable environment consistent with scientific theory. Then using statistical analysis, we can compute the probability of these events unfolding as they were predicted by random chance versus the actual frank knowledge of the author. In the Playing the Odds chapter of Tea with Terrorists, we calculated the probability that 20 of the more specific Maaseiah prophecies could have been fulfilled randomly. I chose these because, with the Dead Sea Scrolls, we possess actual written copies of God's predictions that predate the forecast enactment, as well as copious contemporary written eyewitness records of the fulfillment. The odds against Elisha being lucky were at least 10 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0 0000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000000 another measure of proof. Consider the fact that God's testimony regarding the creation of life and the universe is over 3,000 years old, and yet it is perfectly accurate. The scientific assumptions over that period have been rewritten 1,000 times, with each new theory repudiating the prior one. The moral of this story is that it is wise to trust someone who has consistently told us the truth. That said, the universe isn't 6,000 years old as the creationists advocate. When they postulate such nonsense, they embarrass themselves and prevent many from trusting the only scriptures that can explain the existence of life but can't provide the means to sustain it. Moreover, they turn their God into a deceiver, someone who would make that which is relatively recent appear ancient just to toy with us.